Chapter 5 Missionary to the World. Looking down at the mix of thick jungle inland and the congestion of streets and modern buildings bordering the coast, Wanda felt mixed emotions as she approached Papua New Guinea once more. The jet maneuvered into its landing pattern, and soon Wanda deplaned and made her way into the airport terminal. This arrival was so different from the previous ones. This time she was alone, no husband and no children. This time she was not beginning a missionary term, but making a brief stop on her way to Israel and a missionary assignment there. She had 10 days to renew friendships, celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Nazarene work in Papua New Guinea, and rejoice at what had been accomplished for God and His kingdom. Anniversaries are reflections of beginnings. The next 10 days were to be praise-filled hours for Wanda as she viewed the progress of the church in this land that had become home in such a special way to her. As Wanda moved from place to place during those days, memories flooded her mind. On this very special occasion of the 25th anniversary, the new district center at Kiom was dedicated. As Wanda sat in the service, she jotted down her reminiscences. She remembered when she and Sid had no Christian Papua New Guinean friend with whom to find fellowship. Now, here were hundreds and hundreds, almost 1,000 gathered, singing God's praise. She rejoiced over the many pastors and their families present whom she had taught in grade school. She remembered when even a simple melody was difficult for the people to follow. Now, here was a choir singing in four-part harmony. She remembered when missionaries had to do everything. Now, here was a Papua New Guinean district superintendent handling the services so very well, national Christians leading the singing and playing guitars, praying and organizing the services. She was overwhelmed. She exclaimed, "Beautiful! I remember when, even to the Christians, following Christ still seemed foreign, but now I sense a depth of spirit and hunger for more of God's spirit in many that I have talked with. I saw a growth of trees that made the scenery change, and I sensed a growth of spirit that made me know the church is changing too, in good ways. I can do nothing except give praise for being allowed to be part of the beginning and to share in this celebration of the 25th. Editor's note: The Church in PNG After 60 Years. When Wanda visited PNG for the 25th anniversary of the work there, the church had grown remarkably since its founding in 1956. Wanda noted the difference from the time that there were no Papua New Guinean Christians in the area where they lived, and no churches. By that time, she was worshiping with a group of nearly 1,000 people. At the time of the 25th anniversary, the work had grown to 50 churches, both organized and not yet organized, on four districts, with a weekly average attendance of 3,435. I had the privilege of attending the 50th anniversary of the work in Papua New Guinea in 2006. At the time of this 50th anniversary, the work had further grown to 496 churches, both organized and not yet organized, on 12 districts, with a weekly average attendance of 20,653. At that time, the 50th anniversary, the size of the crowd was very difficult to determine. There were estimates as high as 25,000 at some of the services. That celebration lasted a full week. There were messages from retired missionaries and early church leaders. Wanda also commented on the fact that there was a Papua New Guinean district superintendent leading the celebration. That superintendent was Reverend Tahi Madiria. He went on to become the first full-time chaplain at Nazarene Hospital. Though his time in elected office was over, he was seen as a leader for the rest of his life. He was often consulted by church leaders when important decisions were being considered. He had a passion for church planting. At the time when he was anticipating retirement, I asked him what he planned to do to stay busy after he retired. Without hesitation, he replied, "Plant churches." It was my privilege to be at his bedside in the last moments of his earthly life, surrounded by four generations of family and many friends. His death was in sharp contrast to what I witnessed so often in PNG, where the animistic beliefs heavily influence attitudes toward death. The Church of the Nazarene has now been in Papua New Guinea for 63 years. If Wanda could see it now, she would again be surprised and pleased to see the changes. The original district has been repeatedly divided, ultimately to form 5 districts. New districts were established in other parts of PNG, where the church spread, not by missionaries from Western countries, but by Papua New Guinean pastors and evangelists. As of the 2018 statistical year, there are 13 districts, and one more planned within a year, each with a Papua New Guinean district superintendent. There are 377 churches and 212 preaching points. On an average Sunday, 35,098 people worship in the churches. There are 319 elders, 19 deacons, and 328 licensed ministers. Papua New Guineans have gone as missionaries to 3 other countries. The entire faculty of the Bible College, now called Melanesia Nazarene Bible College, are Papua New Guineans, except for one, who is a missionary from Samoa. Several of these have master's degrees, and a PhD will soon join them. In addition to MNBC, there is Melanesia Nazarene Teachers College and Nazarene College of Nursing. There are 2 Nazarene high schools and many elementary schools. As mentioned, the hospital has been central to the life of the church in PNG in a way most people outside the country may not imagine. It continues to bring those in physical and spiritual need to Christ through the Church of the Nazarene. Reverend Harmon Schmelzenbach IV served as field strategy coordinator of the Melanesia South Pacific Field, which includes PNG, from 2009 to 2019. He recently wrote, "The last 10 years have seen phenomenal growth for the Church of the Nazarene across Papua New Guinea under national leadership. The expansion of Nazarene institutions and districts has resulted in the establishment of the 13th and now the 14th organized district, and substantial steps in uniting the Bible College, the Teachers College, and the Nurses College toward the fulfillment of the vision of a Melanesian Nazarene university." The delightful 10 days in Papua New Guinea ended all too soon, Wanda noted in her diary. "It's almost impossible to put down how I really felt, but it was a most beautiful time. I will live with that memory in my heart for many years. It was good to see the missionaries and other friends across the valley, too. Another special gift from him. And now, on to Israel." Wanda arrived in Tel Aviv on August 7, 1980, and was met by Merlin and Alice Hunter, missionaries serving in Nazareth, and Juanita Smith, who became a housemate and very dear friend. Juanita had been a volunteer in Israel since 1977, and then had been put on special assignment to help Wanda during the Morgan's furlough. Wanda experienced her first meal in Israel at Quickly's, a small Jewish restaurant that was to become a favorite place with its specialties of chicken livers, pita bread, and hummus. Hummus is a traditional salad puree of crushed chickpeas with olive oil and red paprika. From pioneering in Papua New Guinea to pastoring in such a tourist spot as Jerusalem was not an easy transition for Wanda. It was also difficult for a woman to have this kind of responsibility and authority in a very male-oriented society. In the beginning, some of the people had a real problem with this situation. But in a very short time, Wanda had won their confidence and respect and was deeply loved by them. It wouldn't have worked out if God had not been directing all of the time. Wanda loved the Sunday schools out in the villages. Friday was the big Sunday school day in some of the villages, and as it was the Muslim day off, some of the Muslim children met with the other children for Bible stories. Wanda and Juanita always went a little early to allow time for buying fresh vegetables and fruit in the open-air markets. They would also buy fresh eggs and pick out the plumpest chicken, waiting for the vendors to kill it, drain, and pluck it. Wanda also loved the Saturday afternoon services, mainly Arab and Armenian, in the old city on Mount Zion. The people loved to sing, and one favorite chorus Wanda sang in Pidgin and taught in English was, "Have I not told you that if you believe, you'll see the glory of God?" Often as she labored, her heart would go out to the Morgans and the other missionaries who had labored so long and so hard for so little fruit. Such a ministry was not easy, but in spite of the difficulties, Wanda felt that God gave her a good year in many ways. She met some wonderful people. She would cherish the friendships of Michael, a Russian Jew, and Diana, an Old City Armenian lady. Wanda and Diana couldn't carry on a conversation because of the language difference, but it was enough to communicate through a handshake and a smile, and to know that each was praying for the other. There were Hala and Nabil and their families, Arabs in the Jerusalem church, and Araxi and Sarun, Armenians of Jericho. Araxi served as the translator for the Saturday services in the Old City. There were encouraging prayer meetings and signs of God's Spirit working in the lives of the people. Wanda would also be able to complete 20 hours of college work at the Institute of Holy Land Studies while pastoring the church in Jerusalem. Going on field trips for the study of the history and geography of Israel gave her a new feel of the land. Traveling out of the borders of the old tribal clans, she felt she was being transported centuries back. As Wanda traveled the dusty roads and walked beside the Sea of Galilee, she felt as if the Lord himself walked beside her, showing her his earthly home place. She enjoyed eating in the university cafeteria, but one day her presence almost created a riot. As she was getting her meal, she forgot and left her briefcase under the coffee urn. When someone saw it unattended, they thought it was a bomb. People began getting up and leaving, not bothering to finish their meal. At last, an attendant came over to Wanda, who had not understood Hebrew, and asked her in English if the briefcase was hers. When she stood up to get it, everyone began to clap, and she, red-faced and embarrassed, retrieved the offending case. Wanda had many unique experiences in Israel. Once, she and Juanita were invited to go to Beersheba with a couple from the Christian and Missionary Alliance Church to minister to some Bedouins. As they approached the tents, some women saw the car and put their veils over their faces because of a man being present. When the missionaries gave a friendly greeting of peace, they were immediately invited into the tent. Taking off their shoes, the group sat down on mats and enjoyed tea along with good fellowship and the sharing of the gospel. It was fascinating watching the women make a fire from a few pieces of wood and cardboard. One of the women then put some water into each of the glasses she was going to serve the tea in, and using her fingers, cleaned the inside and outside. When the water began to boil, she put loose tea and two handfuls of sugar into the pot and boiled the mixture a little longer. It was very sweet. They always serve from a tray, and if it is a friendly visit, they will serve three times. It would be impolite not to drink it. One afternoon, Wanda and Juanita were doing a little sightseeing with Merlin and Alice Hunter in the city of Nain. There is a small Franciscan church built there in memory of the miracle performed by Jesus. They were walking through some high brush to take a picture of the church when Wanda stepped up on a rock wall and felt something, either a sting or a bite. At first, she thought it was her toe, but then she found a mark halfway up her shin. Her foot and leg became numb, and she thought whatever it was must have put some poison into her system. She decided it might have been a scorpion. Juanita remembers. Along the way to Mount Tabor, a couple of miles, 3.2 kilometers away, we had prayed individually. But when we were in the Church of the Transfiguration, we prayed collectively, and Wanda began to feel a change right away. Within a few minutes, the pain and discomfort had completely gone, and we thanked and praised God for his touch. An added joy of the Israel experience was Janie's visit at Christmas. It was Wanda's delight to show Janie the sights and sounds of this lovely land. During Janie's 2 weeks there, they did much traveling. Shopping had always been a favorite pastime of Wanda's, and now she loved to wander through the many shops in the Old City, enjoying the bargaining even more than the shopping, and usually able to get her bottom price. On shopping excursions, sometimes conversations would develop with the shopkeeper about everyday living and life in general. Living in Israel, one had to be careful how subjects of religion were handled. Wanda deftly handled such situations. A Muslim shopkeeper, who was a mystic, told what he experienced in his religion, and Wanda would say, "Ah, but you can have so much more." And then there was the Jewish craftsman who told her that his boy had just recently had his bar mitzvah and said, "Now his sins are upon his own head. I'm no longer responsible for him." Wanda replied, "And we have someone that took our sins upon himself." As Wanda would share with Jews and Muslims, she would often turn and wipe the tears from her eyes because her heart was breaking as she listened to them share with her that they were doing and living the best they could. These believed in God, but so much different than she. Janie, having become engaged to Dennis Norick, enjoyed making wedding plans with her mother. Following the year in Israel, and after the wedding in August of 1981, Wanda moved to Bethany to continue her education so that she might be able to offer herself to the World Mission Department as a supply missionary or in whatever capacity she was needed. She completed her BA degree during the fall semester and then worked on her master's degree during the spring and fall semesters of 1982. Wanda became a part of Bethany First Church staff as college pastor while she was on campus. Though she established many close relationships with the college young people, she didn't always relate as she wished because of her age and her absence from American culture for so many years. Wanda lived a very simple lifestyle and was often concerned at the affluence and materialism she saw among many of the students. She was also deeply concerned that spiritual experiences were shallow rather than a deep commitment to God. Her godly influence was felt on campus, and students like Gary Yarbury, then a pastor in Arkansas, said of her, "Wanda was an inspiring person who always exemplified the servant Jesus. I have wished many times to have the commitment level she possessed. Her dedication still speaks to me." Gary said he would always remember some counsel Wanda once gave him in a difficult decision that he was trying to make. She said, "When your head tells you one thing and your heart another, follow the voice of the heart." Gary said he had followed that advice in sermon preparation, preaching, visiting, board decisions, family matters, and many other areas of life, and had never regretted following the voice of the heart. Wanda's achievements and influence upon the campus was remembered in 1984 when she was the recipient of the B Award from Bethany Nazarene College for meritorious service. Wanda's schooling was interrupted by another mission call, and this time she was appointed for a full term to the Caribbean Nazarene Theological College, now Caribbean Nazarene College, in the beautiful land of Trinidad. She left for Trinidad in February of 1983. From Papua New Guinea to Israel to the Caribbean took a lot of adjusting. Different environments, different cultures, different languages evoked different responses. Both Wanda and the students at the seminary had lots to learn. Errol Karam, one of her students, took Wanda's openness and friendliness as a front, and so when she asked to go with him to town to do some shopping, he thought she was kidding. Missionaries just didn't do that, so he left her. When he came back, she met him, demanding, "Young man, you left me standing here. Why did you leave me?" Realizing her genuineness, Errol entered into a friendship that was to impact his life significantly. Wanda added a refreshing dimension to the campus with her vitality, friendly hospitality, and her tough love that never felt tough because it was so loving. Her classes were stimulating and different. She read from Calvin Miller's The Singer every morning. It was the first time that Errol had ever experienced a perspective and interpretation of Christ other than the Bible, and it was very meaningful to him. Even today, he says whenever he sees that book, he thinks of Wanda. She introduced the students to C.S. Lewis and Shakespeare. She encouraged the students to dramatize Shakespeare's works in class, and what a compliment it was to them when she told them they had done it well. It was the little gestures of friendship that so endeared Wanda to Errol. He pastored a small home mission church plant while in school and traveled to the church on public transport. Many a Sunday evening, coming in dead tired, he would go to his mailbox and there find a note of encouragement from Wanda. It was his dream that someday when he finished his education, he and Wanda would teach in the seminary together. Expressing the influence of Wanda upon him, Errol said, "All of us in life have people we want to achieve for. In my background, there was no one in particular, but I wanted to achieve for Wanda. I wanted to accomplish something for her. Editor's note, Errol Karam. When asked for his memories of Wanda Knox, Errol Karam began with the words, teacher, mother, friend. During Wanda's final illness, Errol continued his studies at Eastern Nazarene College in Quincy, Massachusetts, USA. While studying there, he served as associate pastor at Hartford, Connecticut Church of the Nazarene. He served as youth and visitation pastor. Though he had hoped to see Wanda, he was not able to travel to Kansas City before her death. He received a B.A. in 1986 and an M.A. in 1987. Around the time of his graduation, he received word from Wanda's dear friend, Kathy Butts, that she wanted to underwrite his tuition to attend Nazarene Theological Seminary, NTS, in Kansas City. During his time at NTS, Errol met Rhonda Gibson at a single Sunday school class at then Kansas City Hillcrest Church of the Nazarene. She was studying at NTS for her MDiv in missions. They were married 5 days after their graduation in 1990. Errol and Rhonda's first place of ministry was back where Errol had begun his ministerial education and where he first met Wanda, at Caribbean Nazarene Theological College. He and Rhonda taught there for 10 years. Rhonda completed her Doctor of Ministry in Spiritual Formation at Asbury College in Wilmore, Kentucky in 2000, and then began doctoral studies at Nazarene Theological College in Manchester, England. During their time there, they had a baby daughter, Kimberly. The Karams returned to the U.S. in 2004, where Rhonda accepted a faculty position in the School of Theology and Christian Ministries at Northwest Nazarene University in Nampa, Idaho. While she continued to teach at NNU, Errol began a practice of life and leadership coaching in 2013. Since 2015, they have both directed the Ethnic Leadership Development Initiative. In 2018, Rhonda took a sabbatical, and the two of them, along with Kimberly, spent 6 months as pastor of a church in Dargaville, New Zealand. Rhonda is now principal of Nazarene Theological College, South Africa, in Johannesburg, South Africa. Errol is working in support roles there, helping to restore the physical facilities and helping with teaching responsibilities. I asked Errol about Wanda's long-term impact on his life and ministry. Without a doubt, Wanda's long-term impact has been her openness to people. When she showed up at the college in Trinidad, from day one, she interacted with everyone with a kind, caring, and gentle spirit. Between classes or at the end of the day, she did not hustle off to her apartment. Instead, she stood around and talked with us, students. Often, she would invite a group of students to her apartment to share some popcorn and hang out. Wanda taught me how to be open to people and that I should learn to trust people. I then asked him to speculate as to how his life might have been different had he not known her. I think I would have continued struggling with my self-worth. When Wanda reached out to me, she demonstrated genuine care and helped me begin seeing I had worth before God and the people of God. Up to that point in my life, very few people had shown me that I had worth at all. I also would have found it difficult to trust others. Little did I realize that her brief investment in my life in Trinidad was preparing me for my journeys to the U.S., England, New Zealand, and now South Africa. Wanda's contacts with the students and with the people gave her great enjoyment and fulfillment, which helped to alleviate the distress and discouragement she sometimes felt in some of her circumstances. All of the water had to be boiled, and since she used most of hers in making drinks for others, she was always running out. There were extreme changes in the weather, and she was often awakened in the early morning by fierce storms. Travel was always difficult, and the roads were challenging to her. Her classes really did drain her as she put in hours of work developing new curriculum. She missed the close relationships of previous years and said, "Sometimes I'd like to relax with someone I could talk to about anything, but I'm not complaining. I'm grateful to the Lord for the place He's given me to serve." While she was in Trinidad, she received exciting news from home. She shared in her diary, "Today, Garen called. His voice was filled with excitement and pride. He and Loretta have been blessed with a healthy, beautiful, my eyes haven't seen her yet, but Garen says she's beautiful, baby girl, Lindsay Marie, 6 pounds, 11 ounces, 3 kilograms, on November 6, 1983, my first grandchild. I have wanted a grandchild for quite a few years already. So how can I explain how I feel? I feel warm and happy and so tender. Yet I ache inside, too, to be so far away. The only comfort is in knowing I am where he wants me at the present time. But I am human enough to long to see and hold my precious granddaughter in my arms. Lindsay, I will be thinking of you so much, and already, before you were born, I've been praying for you, and will continue to do that. And your grandmother just wants you to know that you are so precious, so special, and I love you dearly. Even if I can't hold you in my arms, I hold you in my heart. The deep need around her touched Wanda's heart. Sickness and death ravaged the people. Once, Wanda took a very ill student to a clinic. The nurse asked if the student was bleeding from the eyes, ears, or nose. And when Wanda said no, the nurse declared it was not an emergency and wouldn't see him. After a long wait, the guard at the clinic finally said, "He don't look sick to me." Wanda, incensed, said later, "I could have hit him." Fortunately for all concerned, the student at last got the necessary medical treatment he required. While in Trinidad, Wanda was also able to go to Barbados for special services. She loved the services there. The singing, clapping, and playing of tambourines, the dancing down the aisles. Wanda exclaimed, "I love, just love it. They praise the Lord so uninhibitedly. They do more congregational singing, fewer specials. I like that." At the missionary convention, a dramatic flair was added by having people dressed up to represent Mr. General Budget, the precursor to the World Evangelism Fund, Miss NWMS, Mr. Prayer and Fasting, etc. They rode in cars to the church, escorted by a policeman who was saluting everyone and beating back the crowd who were trying to see the VIPs, the very important persons. It reminded Wanda of the times she as a young person would so enjoy the district assembly. These people seemed so relaxed, seemed to be having so much fun, and seemed to be so enjoying the Lord. In December of 1983, Wanda had her Christmas break all planned. She had been invited to 6 different homes for a day during the holidays. Also, she had paint on hand and was planning to paint her kitchen and bathroom during her days off. She was looking forward to relaxing and doing a lot of swimming, but her well-laid plans were interrupted. She began feeling very tired, but thought it was the humidity. Then she noticed a large bulge in her abdomen. She thought it was because she was now middle-aged and that she was just getting fat, but decided to check with the doctor. The doctor, discovering a large mass, wanted to operate right away, but Wanda decided to return to the States to have the surgery. Kathy Butts, hearing the news in Kansas City, was stunned and called Trinidad immediately to talk to Wanda. Wanda seemed quite calm and in complete control of the situation. She mentioned that she would need a doctor in Kansas City, since Dr. Howard Hamlin had been her doctor before she left. Dr. Howard Hamlin was a Nazarene layman and former medical missionary to South Africa and Swaziland, now Eswatini. Now, with Dr. Hamlin's death, she would need another. Wanda had made her plans. She told Kathy, "I'll fly to Oklahoma City on Christmas Day to be with my folks for the holidays. Then I will come on to Kansas City to see the doctor there. Will you care for me if I have to have surgery?" On Christmas Day, Wanda experienced her first Christmas dinner in the air. She enjoyed the few days with her mom and dad and had the unexpected pleasure of seeing Janie and Dennis at her mom's. Then the holidays were over, and she made her way to Kansas City. Kathy met her at the airport, and they went to a special restaurant on the way home. Wanda's appetite was as good as ever, and she loved to eat. Wanda had chosen her doctor, who was the one that had cared for Dr. Hamlin during his illness. That first night after her arrival in Kansas City, she and Kathy talked most of the night. It was a beautiful talk about death and dying and heaven and grace and all the wonderful things Christians have to look forward to, even in the face of adversity or sickness. They shared their common beliefs deeply, prayer for healing and intercession. It was a precious time of heart fellowship. The visit to the doctor was a bit tense for both Kathy and Wanda. Wanda was a little nervous, mostly because of the new doctor. She came from the examining room and admitted that surgery was inevitable. But she was quite pleased with her doctor. Even though he was a Hindu, they immediately shared an in-depth discussion about religious matters and their own personal beliefs. Kathy observed, "She never did wait long to get on those subjects." In January 1984, Wanda wrote, "Only he knows what 84 holds for me. But you know, he's been in control of my life for a long time now, and I feel confident that he is in control now, regardless of the outcome. I only pray that he will give me strength to glorify him in all things. Really, to live or die matters not, if we really believe what we say we believe. And in my heart, there's a deep, deep peace, in spite of the human reluctance to face suffering. I love him more each day." Surgery was scheduled for Tuesday, January 10. Wanda's testimony and faith were anchored upon God's word, and she entered the operating room with his promise. "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." Jeremiah 29:11, NIV. Chapter 6. A Name Written Down in Glory. The shrill jangling of the telephone broke the silence of the hospital room. It was the first sound to reach Wanda's consciousness as she came out of anesthesia following her surgery. Then she heard Garen's voice in conversation with the caller. "Not too good. It was malignant, and they didn't get it all." Later, reliving those moments, Wanda shared in her diary, "It would be impossible to explain the depth of peace that flooded me at that moment. I have looked back to it many times since. I didn't know what all the future might hold, but at that point, all that mattered was that he was holding me, and he still is." The waiting room was jammed with family and friends also awaiting the surgery results. When they received the news, they cried. There were tears of relief that the surgery was over, but sorrow that the malignant tumors were not completely removed. There were tears of hope at the news that with chemotherapy there was a chance of recovery. There were tears of pain as those who loved her realized she had more suffering ahead of her. When everyone but Kathy was gone, late in that first night after surgery, Wanda said into the darkness, "How bad was it? Tell me everything." And Kathy did, for they had agreed before surgery that nothing would be withheld from Wanda. Kathy explained the extent of the spread of the ovarian carcinoma, but also the good news that the implants that could not be removed had not penetrated any other vital areas. Several times during the night, Wanda woke up and asked more questions, but the peace that flooded her soul in those first moments after surgery held her in the days that followed. Wanda's recovery from the surgery was quite normal. She wrote letters, received visitors, and generally kept everyone cheered up. In a letter written in February 1984, she assured her friends, "I'm in good health, other than this invader, so the doctor is conservatively optimistic. I will be taking chemotherapy once every 3 weeks for 6 months. After 3 months, and then again after 6 months, another series of tests will be run. And if by then nothing is found to be growing, they may do a second surgery just to see what's happening inside, to see if the implants are drying up. I won't deny the change of direction has been difficult, perhaps because it was so sudden. I've delighted in teaching in Trinidad. I've loved the students and the people, and I miss them immensely. But then, what a joy to be able to pray for them personally, along with others that I've been with, in Israel and Papua New Guinea. I feel at peace about it. I'm still where I have been for many years now, in his hands." Life had become different for Wanda from what it had ever been before. It was the first time she would remember not having time limits. She tired easily, and so did a lot of resting, hoping it would speed her recovery. She delighted in the close association with Garen and his family during these weeks of recovery. Wanda loved to play with her granddaughter, Lindsay, and to work on her grandma's book. Lindsay loved her special times with Mama Wanda. Wanda, sitting in her big chair, would place a blanket at her feet where Lindsay would play contentedly. One evening, Garen and Loretta brought pizza, Lindsay's favorite food, to Wanda's house. Wanda could eat only soup. Lindsay, settled at Mama's feet, ready to eat pizza, suddenly realized that Mama had soup, not pizza. "Want soup? Want soup?" Lindsay protested. Wanda, immensely thrilled, had Kathy discard the pizza, and grandmother and granddaughter shared the invalid fare that had turned into a special treat. It was also during this time of recovery that Wanda received the joyous news of Janie's pregnancy, and Wanda was exultant. "My blessings are coming quickly. I am so happy for you, and am looking forward to holding this second grandchild in my arms." Inspired by these events, Wanda took advantage of extra time to write personal letters to her grandchildren to open when they reached the age of 10. When Wanda recovered to the point that chemotherapy could begin, her lifestyle changed drastically. Her will to cooperate with everything medical science offered was amazing. These were difficult days. Early on Monday mornings, she would enter the hospital for several hours of chemotherapy. She would be violently ill on the way home from the hospital, and for several hours following, until sleep finally came. About 2 a.m, she would awaken and ask for a couple sips of juice and 2 spoons full of cooked cereal. She was motivated to get back on her feet as soon as possible. For 3 or 4 days following each treatment, her strength would seem almost gone, but she pushed and forced herself to eat, to keep in the best health possible. Between treatments, she and Kathy would travel around Missouri and Kansas, building up her physical strength. It helped her to cope, and Kathy remembers how much fun they had, even in the midst of a most trying time. Along with the sickness from the chemotherapy came the usual reaction of hair loss. Kathy remembers standing behind Wanda as she tried on wigs. Tears poured down Wanda's face, and that day a complete stranger sat down beside her, took off her own wig, and shared her experience. Wanda immediately responded with a positiveness about the hair loss. That positiveness carried her through to the time she removed her wig for the last time. Wanda's second surgery was scheduled in October. About 2 weeks before surgery, a letter came to Wanda from Kay Williams. She and her husband were finishing their second term as missionaries in Taiwan. Wanda was surprised to find that she was a very special person to Kay. Kay shared that she had felt God's gentle urging to write to Wanda, to let her know she was praying for her, to encourage her, and to tell her that actually, Wanda had had a lot to do with Kay's being in Taiwan. The story unfolded that Kay, as a child, had read Wanda's book, Pioneers to New Guinea, written for the Children's Missionary Series. It had tugged at her heart and confirmed a mission call in her life. She had told her family and classmates at school that when she grew up, she was going to be a missionary. She got Wanda's address at that time to write to her and let her know, too. Kay's mother was happy for her to write, but she tried to allay the possible disappointment of not receiving an answer by reminding Kay of missionaries' busy schedules. However, a few weeks later, a letter from New Guinea came, and as Kay said, "You just can't imagine how excited I was." God reminded Kay of her call many times while she was growing up, but by the time she got into college, she had almost convinced herself that she could do God's work just as well at home. The night came, though, that God made it crystal clear to her that she should be a missionary. He took her on a journey through her memory, back to the little girl reading the missionary book. That was indeed a guidepost of his leading in her life. Kay shared, "From that point until now, it's been wonderful just feeling the sweet, assuring leadership of God in my life. I just wanted to write and thank you for your part in the whole thing. Sometimes the enemy tries to get us down and make us think that it's all been in vain. But often people are being touched by our lives when we are not aware of it at all. Thank you for touching my life in an indirect but very real way. I pray for you during your illness. I am claiming Jeremiah 29:11 for you. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." Wanda laid the letter down, tears flowing freely, as she thanked God for confirming his word to her again at the very time through someone so very far away. She had begun the year with that very promise. She had never claimed the promise as complete healing, but felt it was God's special way of telling her that she was his, that she was still in his hands and his plans, and that whatever the future held, it would come out to good, whether here on earth or on the other side. Knowing God was in control was all that mattered, as Wanda stated in a letter following her surgery. After all, isn't our purpose to fulfill His will in our lives and to glorify Him? He can help us do that, whatever circumstances allow. Having such faith enabled Wanda to say, "So, when the doctor spoke in my ear as I was coming around, saying everything was all right, and then later, as all the pathology reports came back completely negative, and they found no trace of the cancer left, I found that the joy of thinking of a healthy body again was rather overshadowed by that still deep peace that He had already given for months. I found myself praying, 'Well, Lord, Your plans must include some things You still have for me to do here. Keep me sensitive to You, and don't let me disappoint You.'" The official report on the second surgery was a complete remission, but it would not be called a cure until at least 5 years had passed. During the first year, she was to have tests and scans about every 3 months, and then have to be tested only once a year. By November, Wanda was resuming her normal lifestyle and busy schedule. Helen Bowlerjack had returned to the States for the birth of her grandchild, Sarah Maloff. Helen and the late Ray Bowlerjack served as missionaries to PNG for 29 years. Sarah is the daughter of Linda Maloff, the Bowlerjack's daughter. Helen remembers Wanda insisting that they have lunch, though Wanda had sat up all night at the bedside of a dear friend who had undergone surgery. Helen reminisced. "I'm glad she did. During our very lengthy conversation, she shared with me, among other things, how the Lord had given her such a deep, deep peace that was so precious and real that it was difficult to describe." Wanda was also able to travel to Texas and welcome her new grandson, Aaron Norick, into the world. She enjoyed a wonderful Christmas with her family and busily made plans to attend seminary in the early part of 1985 while regaining her strength, her health, and her hair. During the 10 months following her second surgery, Wanda was completely free from chemotherapy, and what a joy that was to her. Her strength returned rapidly, and she enjoyed a semester of study at seminary and made several trips to speak in various Faith Promise conventions. The 1985 General Assembly in Anaheim, California, USA, was a great blessing to her. She met and visited with many friends from across the years and arranged both Trinidad and Papua New Guinea reunions. With no responsibilities but to visit, worship, and praise the Lord, she experienced great joy. Following General Assembly, she spent several days in Texas drinking in her precious grandson, Aaron. Remembering that visit, she wrote in her diary, "Aaron, bearer of light, I pray he will always be just that. What fun it is to be with you and hold you. You are growing so and have one of the most delightful personalities. I hope you will always stay sweet and loving." After she returned home, a routine CAT scan revealed a small shadow. Surgery was scheduled for early August. Only Garen and Janie, Kathy and Dr. Neese, executive director of Rural Mission, knew of this new development. It was thought to be a small, benign tumor. Wanda noted in her diary, "They have found something in the scans. It doesn't seem to be going away, so the tumor board has decided surgery is the best option. If it's benign, they'll take it out, and my plans to go to Bethany and on to Trinidad will remain unchanged. If it's malignant, well, decisions will then have to be made. How do I feel? A little drained. It's not necessarily easy living with this constant possibility. However, the deep inner feeling of peace remains." 20 minutes after surgery began, the surgeon called Kathy to come to the consultation room. He advised that the cancer had returned and a colostomy was absolutely necessary. He was devastated himself, since both the surgeon and the oncologist were especially fond of this vibrant missionary who challenged their medical knowledge along with their thought about God, His universe, and His creation. The first night of this last surgery, when all company had gone for the night, Wanda rallied and said, "How bad is it?" She and Kathy called the cancer gremlins, and Kathy shared with her that the gremlins had returned. She slept a while longer, then asked, "What else?" When Kathy told her she had a colostomy, she inquired as to whether it was temporary or permanent, still holding on to recovery. Kathy remembers, when I told her it was irreversible, a dark cloud came over that room, and I knew that a battle raged within. It took her 2 days to come to grips with her situation, but she soon had it handled with that undefeatable spirit to make the most of what was left. Wanda's Hindu doctor met with her, the children, and Kathy, and shared that all had been done that could be done. Weeping unashamedly, he said he would do all that he could do to make her comfortable and confessed, "As you know, we are very fond of this woman." In September, Wanda sent a form letter to her friends, informing them of her condition at the time. She went on treatment from MD Anderson Cancer Institute of Houston. It was an experimental drug, and no one was sure of the outcome. But she assured her friends that, though her circumstances had changed again, God had not, and her promise from Jeremiah was more precious than ever, a constant that would continue through eternity. The months that followed are permanently engraved in the memory of those who surrounded Wanda during those days. They will remember a woman who believed God to the end. No amount of pain could make her doubt his love. Though there were times she rocked on her knees in agony, she knew he was still holding her in his hands. The doctors agreed that the experimental treatment from Houston was not proving effective as fluid built up, and Wanda had to have fluid removed from her abdomen about twice a week. Many emergency runs were made in the middle of the night when it seemed she was at the point of death. Kathy vividly remembers one such time, when after another crisis had been averted, Wanda, feeling much better, said she was hungry. She sent Kathy out for Mexican food, and when Kathy brought it, Wanda wolfed it down. The hospital room suddenly filled with the wonderful odor of Mexican food. Thanksgiving time drew near, and though Wanda was very weak, the whole family was coming in to celebrate. Wanda was so looking forward to it and hoping it would be one of her good days. Donna Fillmore's Sunday school class of sixth grade girls took Wanda's Thanksgiving celebration on as a special prayer project. In their classroom each week, they placed a rose to represent Wanda, and they would pray that she would have enough of an appetite to enjoy her Thanksgiving meal and strength to enjoy the fellowship of her loved ones. Their prayers were answered. Wanda enjoyed her dinner immensely and was able to sit up and talk and laugh and play games with her children and grandchildren. Later, she sent a card of thanks to the girls. "I want to thank you so much for your precious prayers for me. I especially wanted you to know that this week has been perfect. I have felt so good and enjoyed my family so much on Thanksgiving Day. I'm sure God answered your prayers." Also in November, Wanda dropped a note to Nina Gunter, then executive director of NWMS, now NMI, apologizing for an uncompleted writing assignment. Dr. Gunter, former pastor and global NMI director, was elected to serve as a general superintendent for the Church of the Nazarene in 2005. She was the first woman to be elected to this high office in the denomination. Wanda explained that she didn't have the strength or concentration to write the article, but she did want to share some words about how the medical plan, now Missionary Healthcare, had helped her, and perhaps her thanks could be shared in an article. Up to that point, Wanda figured her medical costs had been close to $50,000. Wanda exclaimed, "What would I have done if our people had not provided for their missionaries an adequate medical plan? I think that I've only had to pay around $300 a year out of my own pocket for medical expenses since I've been ill. To fight the illness has not been easy. To have had to worry about finance would have been terrible. Oh, how grateful I am to our people around the church who love us and believe in the call of missions and are willing to support us in salaries, in prayers, in extras like links." Now a network of personal connections between missionaries and Nazarene districts and local churches around the world. "And the medical plan. I could never thank them enough." Dr. Alex and Joyce Deasley ministered to Wanda during her illness in a special way. Dr. Alex Deasley taught at a number of Nazarene schools, including Nazarene Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri, USA. Wanda had brought Alex a communion set from Jerusalem, and she enjoyed taking communion in one of those cups. One day, during a time of extreme weakness when she was barely able to lift her hand, during the communion service while Alex prayed, She sat bolt upright. Remembering the electrifying presence of the Holy Spirit, Joyce said, "I thought she was going to get up." Heaven came near. Wanda directed Christmas activities from her big chair, and though Donna Fillmore addressed her cards, Wanda wrote the notes. In a parting, thoughtful gesture to the Deasleys, she sent a basket of delicacies, things that would please a Scotsman's palate, such as Vegemite, Marmite, and special jams. Well known to those who live in territories of the British Empire, Vegemite and Marmite are similar black food spreads made from leftover brewer's yeast extract and various vegetable and spice additives, which are typically spread on toast. Knowing the end was near, Wanda began to designate pictures on the wall or dishes she wanted to give to her friends. Wanda was very realistic about death. She acknowledged its ugliness, but was very positive about the final outcome. She penned this original verse in her diary. "I used to think, loving life so greatly, that to die would be like leaving a party before the end. Now I know that the party is really happening somewhere else, that the light and the music, escaping in snatches to make the pulse beat and the tempo quicken, come from a long way away. And I know, too, that when I get there, the music and praise to Him will never end." In the last days, Wanda's feet would swell, and Kathy had to buy her larger slippers continually. One day, Wanda looked at her feet that were turning black and said, "I'm dying, Kathy." Those who saw her in that last week realized death was near, but Wanda's indomitable spirit shone through. Miriam Hall, former elementary school teacher, first director of children's ministries for the Church of the Nazarene, remembers visiting the Sunday night before Wanda's death to say goodbye. And after they talked, Wanda said, "But we'll meet again," and laughed out loud. Linda Maliff went by to see Wanda and was shocked to find her almost unrecognizable. She had wasted away. But when she smiled, the recognition came, and she was Aunt Wanda. Though Wanda was drowsy because of the medication, she was coherent, and they talked for a while. Even at this critical stage, Wanda was grateful for many things. She was thankful she could stay home. She had nursing care around the clock and was concerned for her nurses. Kathy was a pillar of strength and stability to her at this time. Wanda accepted her oncoming death better than anyone else. She planned her funeral and remained her cheerful, trusting self, believing God would take care of her. She would say, "I just want to die like a Christian." Rather than being concerned for herself, she was concerned for the spiritual welfare of her children and grandchildren and how they would adjust without her. Linda knew she'd never see Wanda alive again. Realizing she was the representative on location of all the missionary kids this lovely lady had loved and encouraged through the years, she struggled to say thanks. Inarticulate with grief, all she could say was, "I love you." Early on Friday morning, January 3, 1986, Kathy and Garen were at Wanda's side, where they had been all night. Wanda had taken minimal morphine for her pain, for she wanted to be alert to the end. Kathy and Garen were holding her hands when she roused and said, "Let go of my hands," and then lay back, and it was over. Wanda had escaped the bonds of illness, pain, and suffering, and walked into His presence. 2 hours later, Errol Karam, Wanda's former student in Trinidad, called, and when he heard the news, sobbed openly over the phone. Errol says that Wanda's death was one of the most significant losses in his life. In 1984, even while she was ill, she had worked with Errol through the Sidney Knox Foundation and through scholarships to bring him to the States to further his education. She had made it possible for him to come to Eastern Nazarene College, and through these last 2 years, they'd talked on the phone and exchanged cards and letters, but had not met face-to-face since they'd been in Trinidad. He didn't have money to come to the funeral, but as he expressed it, "Memories are what you remember, not someone in a casket. I had the plaque she'd given me that said, 'The will of God will never lead you where His grace can't keep you,' and a water jug to remember her by. It seemed so strange that she'd died." Helen, The late Helen Temple was the former editor of The Other Sheep, a missions magazine for the Church of the Nazarene. She wrote more than 60 books of mission stories for adults and children. While many assume otherwise, Helen never served as a missionary. In her tribute to Wanda, in the Standard, spoke of the legacy Wanda left for us all. The triumph of faith in God over the worst that Satan can fling at us. This was the theme of her funeral service at Olathe College Church on January 6, 1986. It was a joyful celebration planned by Wanda and carried out by those who loved her. Trust, faith, and joy were proclaimed from the musical prelude to the final benediction. After reading the promise from Jeremiah 29:11 that Wanda had held on to during her months of illness, Pastor Paul Cunningham declared, "Today, she lives out that future with her blessed Lord, whom she will be with forever, and one day we will all be together again." Dr. Charles Strickland, representing the Board of General Superintendents, spoke of the legacy left by Wanda. The late Charles H. Strickland was a minister, missionary, college president, author, and general superintendent in the Church of the Nazarene. He and his wife, the late Fanny Strickland, served as missionaries to South Africa for 18 years. He was the first president of Nazarene Bible College and served as general superintendent from 1972 until 1988. Her missionary passion and gracious spiritual warmth won the admiration of the entire church in North America. Her dedication and her commitment awakened in our youth a desire to serve God. And there are many young missionaries today who testify to receiving their call in a convention led by Wanda. Wanda Knox has given to the Church of the Nazarene a modern example of what a totally dedicated life can give to advance the kingdom of God. A great host of people will rise to call blessed this beautiful handmaiden of the Lord, who brought light to so many who were in spiritual darkness, particularly those from the mountain jungle of Papua New Guinea, whom the world had forgotten. It is our trust and hope that the church will never allow to be forgotten this beautiful life so dedicated to Christ and the church that she so greatly loved. The late Phyllis Perkins Howard served as missionary to Japan and was the director of Nazarene World Mission Society, now Nazarene Missions International, as well as a retired educator, who followed Wanda in the position of executive director of NWMS, wrote a tribute to Wanda that was read at the funeral and that spoke of Wanda pouring her life into NWMS. Dr. Perkins said Wanda would be remembered most for her missionary spirit and her passion for lost souls that she transmitted to missionary societies throughout the international church. Dr. Perkins remembered that when Wanda was orienting her to the director's office, she had said, "When I came to Kansas City in 1975, my missionary vision was primarily for Papua New Guinea. Then, after a short time, I began to feel the burden for the whole world." Dr. Perkins said, "In her genuine, enthusiastic way, she helped all of us catch more of that vision that permeated her life. I have trouble keeping this letter in the past tense. Wanda is very much alive for me, and I celebrate her homegoing and her freedom from pain. Today, Wanda is still with us in her investment and legacy of the missionary vision. We cannot forget her unselfish, total commitment to God's call to serve, nor can we fail to respond to his clear commission for us." Dr. Cunningham's prayer declared, "If God can so mightily equip her, so mightily empower her, there is hope for us that your Holy Spirit can do in and through us what you did in and through her. So help us, O Lord, today not to waste the lessons that you want us to learn through her life and through her death." And that determination was felt even as the service continued. Linda Maliff said, "The most significant part of the funeral to me was the song, Until Then." Linda said then her heart was flooded with joy. Everything was now all right. Finally, Wanda was home, and Linda would go on singing. She would carry on. That legacy was reflected in Dr. Orville Jenkins' funeral message. Dr. Jenkins told of his encounter with Marilyn Wutzik, daughter of one of the first converts of Sidney and Wanda's ministry. The late Dr. Orville W. Jenkins was an American Nazarene minister, district superintendent, and emeritus general superintendent of the Church of the Nazarene. He served on the Board of General Superintendents from 1968 until 1985. Marilyn had said, "My mother heard the message of salvation through the lips of Sidney and Wanda Knox. I was taken to Sunday school and church as a very young child. I too met Jesus, and my life has been totally changed by the gospel." When Dr. Jenkins had asked Marilyn to give one word of what the coming of the missionaries had meant, she answered, "Hope. I was given hope where there was no hope." That legacy would raise up a Wanda Knox Memorial Fund that now has reached over $75,000 to further mission education around the world. A memorial chapel would be built on the campus of Melanesia Nazarene Bible College in Papua New Guinea. This simply designed but beautiful and worshipful building is a fitting tribute to Wanda, who experienced one of her greatest delights in teaching and training young pastors. Already, many hearts have been blessed and lives changed as they have gathered in this chapel and sensed the power and presence of the Holy Spirit in their lives. The benediction prayed at Wanda's funeral continues to be answered. "The powerful change that you made in Wanda's life, which enabled her to pour out her life as a drink offering to God, has been used by the Holy Spirit to change countless lives. She lived with great purpose, and may we in these days of our lives find great purpose in living. May we share the mission you gave her to reach the whole world with the gospel." And, looking down from her heavenly pew, Wanda said, "Amen." Afterward. Heroes. We all have some heroes. We idolize historical figures from world history or our own country's past. We idolize military personnel who have fought on to achieve a victory or save the lives of their comrades, even in seemingly impossible situations. We see stories in the news about people who acted beyond their duties to save a life or prevent a bad situation from getting worse. Have you known someone whom we would all agree has acted heroically? When asked about what they have done, they typically answer, "I'm not a hero. I was just doing my job." Or, "I was just doing what anyone would do in that situation." We know better. We have heroes of the faith, Bible heroes like Deborah, King David, my personal favorite, or the apostles, historical figures like St. Francis, Augustine, even Billy Graham. We have heroes in our own theological and denominational tradition, John Wesley, Phineas Brzee, Hiram Reynolds, and Louise Robinson Chapman, to name a few. In missions, we may think of William Carey, Hudson Taylor, or Adoniram Judson before the founding of our denomination, and Nazarene missionaries like Harmon and Lula Schmelzenbach, Roger and Esther Carson Winans, Orpha Spiker, Fairy Chisholm, Elizabeth Cole, and of course, Sidney and Wanda Knox. Heroes can be dangerous. Once we have put a hero on a pedestal in our minds, they become bigger than life, better than ordinary people, and yes, better than us. We come to believe that they must have qualities and abilities that we don't have because we haven't accomplished what they have. They must be smarter, stronger, braver, more creative, and more spiritual than we are, or we could do what they have done. The danger is that since we don't think we can do what our heroes have done, we hesitate to do anything. We stay home and apologize for being just an ordinary person. But in God's kingdom, we're all ordinary people, and every ordinary person is a hero. We all can have what it takes, because what it takes are faithfulness and obedience. Sid and Wanda just did what anyone would do in the situation. That is what any Christian who is faithful and obedient to God would do. They said yes. Then they went where they believed God was calling them to go. There are probably very few who read these words whom God is calling to the jungles of New Guinea. A few more may sense that they are being called to some other specific place. But every single one of us is being called to something and some place. Maybe God is calling you to serve Him in your small hometown in Africa or the Philippines or Canada. He may be calling you to take a job using your unique skills in a city in Indonesia, Argentina, France, or the United States, and there to shine a light for Him. He may be calling you to teach a Sunday school class in the church you've attended for years. He may be calling you to volunteer in a ministry that is new to you, or to continue what you've been doing for him for a long time, please look at the life of Sidney and Wanda Knox, not as a high standard that you may never measure up to, but as an example of what every one of us can do for God. Use the strengths and abilities God has already given you to serve. Trust Him to give you the physical, mental, and spiritual resources that are needed as you remain faithful and obedient to Him. Act on it. Number one, what characteristics do you recognize in Wanda's calling and its development over time? Make a list of those characteristics, and then make a list of characteristics you see in your own called development. All are called to grow and to be obedient as we grow. Number two, are there lessons you have learned from reading Wanda's story and Sidney's journal entries that you can apply to your own life and ministry, wherever you are? Number three, NMI is the global missions advocate in the local church, nurturing a spirit of missions and mobilizing the church into action, impacting people around the world. Can you see missions advocacy and nurture in Wanda's life and story? How does this challenge you? Number four, one sees the strong influence Wanda had on others' lives during her ministry through missions. Each of us has the capacity to influence others around us. Take a personal inventory of how you are influencing others in missional ways and commit to be more intentional in this. Number five, what might you do in your local church and community to encourage those who are called into specific ministries or missions? How will you walk alongside them as they discern, follow, and fulfill their calling? Number six, clearly, Wanda's life was marked by times of loss and times of adjustment. She seemed to handle that with great poise and grace. Did her losses and times of adjustments contribute to, or detract from, her faithful fulfillment of her calling to go and share the good news of Christ with others? What insights has Wanda's life and story given to you to make the most of every day for the sake of others and for the sake of Christ?